Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, November 23rd, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford and voice-activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more, available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And also by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. Check out Slingbox at a Best Buy near you or visit Slingbox.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Becky Worley.
I'm Jason Howell.
And we have tech news galore.
And ice cream.
And we actually did have ice cream.
I still do have it.
Coming off an ice cream high.
Mine's in my belly.
And it's going to make the news extra special.
That's right. Acer had a press event this morning where they stepped into the tablet wars.
Big time.
They announced the Iconia, which is a dual touchscreen laptop. Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing at what I'm anticipating.
The Iconia.
Actually, you know what I'm laughing at is that you mentioned Meconia, right? Meconium in prep. And now every time I hear Iconia, that just pops in my head.
And
thanks.
It was exclusive to Tom. We heard the name of this clamshell tablet that they were announcing, which is one of those makeup words, Iconia. It's iconic. But of course, the parents in the room were thinking
it's from the land of iconic things. Yes, Iconia.
Iconia. The parents in the room were thinking, oh, sounds just like Meconium, baby's first poop.
Oh, yes. Right. That's a worse than the iPad. All right. Android smartphone was also announced, a cloud-based media sharing service from Acer called ClearFi, another stupid name, and App Store, which is called Alive.
Okay, well, that's a real word, at least.
At least. Yeah. Let's start with the Meconium. It is a dual touchscreen laptop. So it's got a touchscreen on the top, touchscreen on the bottom. The full specs are available in plenty of stories about it, but it's got a Core i5 processor option, 4 gigs of DDR3 RAM, 14-inch multi-touch displays, HD graphics, and all that good stuff. Stuff you'd expect out of it. What do you think, Becky? You know, the idea of being able to like change your interfaces back and forth and have a touchscreen down at the bottom?
For those of you who are listening and not watching, it's a traditional laptop layout where it opens up and you have one on the bottom where your keyboard would be is a touch screen. And so they have a virtual keyboard, and then you can also have all kinds of different controls down here, virtual dials, virtual pads. It's almost like the Microsoft tabletop interface. And while I am always open to new form factors, I just couldn't imagine having a virtual keyboard and not a real one if I was going to have to carry something this big and with this much real estate. Anyways, I just didn't feel the value because I'm such an input-output kind of person that keyboards are a big deal to me, tactile keyboards.
Yeah, you can't touch by feel on a touchscreen keyboard.
No, you cannot type that way.
But do you have an iPad?
I do. And, you know, I think Steve Jobs makes the excellent point is that when you look at the UI of the iPad, touch works in a vertical in a horizontal environment, but not vertical. So this has touch on the vertical screen. And then I could see it kind of working here. It would take a special person who has certain needs. It's not for everyone. And my own reaction personally was, no way. But, wow, it's a cool concept. Could you imagine using a virtual keyboard?
Absolutely. I could imagine using it because I have to look at my hands when I type anyway. So that's not a problem
that
for
is
me.
True.
And there's lots of other cool interface options you have there. But I want to actually use it
before I
say I love it, right? It certainly looks nifty, but I can see all kinds of problems involved in not being able to see what you're doing. But like you said, Jason, the iPad has that same issue. So is it fine to be like, I have a touchscreen down here for controls and I have a touchscreen up here and then I can change things around. I don't have to I don't have to be touching. I don't have to gorilla arm all the time. I can have a touchscreen down, on the bottom. But I would be able to move things around. I would like to be able to reach up and grab windows and swipe them around.
Yes.
While I'm using my laptop.
I almost feel like there's been a little bit of a paradigm shift with all of the touchscreen devices that we've seen in the past
Remind me to find you 50 cents later for saying paradigm shift.
Is that a word that I say a lot?
I don't know. No, just
I feel like people, I actually do say that a lot.
People say it a lot.
Yeah, no,
but totally. I know what you mean.
But I feel like people have gotten really used to working in a touch environment, and that this is maybe a window into the future. Like, I feel like there are going to be a lot more laptops that try and take this on, because it just kind of makes sense that they're going to want to try that. The iPad has been a success,
right.
And people are very used to, in its own way, typing. I don't think it's going to replace all out the keyboard that we're used to. But it'll be another option. I mean, just think of the flexibility that you have here. Like, that's awesome.
As I was just imagining it, I was moving my hands around. I felt like a DJ, how I was rocking different things in different ways. But I also have to say that I could see it because in the Mac operating system, one of the things I like best is gestures. Mm-hmm. So I have become so reliant on gestures to minimize windows, to move between applications, that I could see getting into sort of a what would you call it? A shorthand kind of a way of interfacing that you would get used to, but it would take some getting used to.
Acer announced also a 4.8-inch Android smartphone with 1024 by 480 screen resolution. This actually comes with availability. They say that this will ship by April 2011. It still didn't have a price on it. We didn't get price for the Iconia either. We've got Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, HSDPA support, 1 gigahertz Snapdragon processor, HDMI output. Nothing incredibly revolutionary about the phone, but it's a nice looking phone.
Why not have a multi-channel option here? You got the clamshell, you've got the tablets. Why not throw in the Android phone? What's the big diff?
Oh, right. We haven't mentioned the other two tablets. Acer introduces 7-inch and 10.1-inch Android tablets. These look pretty spiffy. HDMI output, native 1280 by 800 screen resolution, a 5-megapixel rear camera, an HD, they're calling it, front-facing camera, full multi-touch support. So a nice-looking Android tablet OS with a 1.2 gigahertz Qualcomm CPU in it. And then finally, these ClearFi media sharing service, they spent a lot of time talking about, which is the idea that you'd have a cloud storage system and you'd be able to access files from your Acer smartphone, from your Iconia, from your tablet, however you're getting them. And they also talked about launching something called Alive, essentially an app store, and they plan to preload it on their machines.
We can talk this to death, but the bottom line is more fractured Android environment. Different app stores, different cloud computing options. Do we need it?
Yeah, no. We don't. This reminds me of back in the 90s when all the desktop manufacturers decided to put their own front end on Windows. Mm-hmm. And the first thing everybody did when they got a new computer was disable that stupid front end so they could actually just use Windows. And I think, you won't have to disable this, but I think people will say, just give me Marketplace.
Yeah.
I don't really want to use the Acer store for this.
When will these companies learn? Why? I mean, everybody wants to be like Apple, but everybody isn't Apple. Just, like, let's have some unifying moments, okay?
They say it's going to hit netbooks, laptops, smartphones, and tablets. Would that mean it would go on Acer machines with Windows? Would there be a Windows-based app store?
Ugh.
That'd actually be less annoying to me than putting an app store in Android where there already is one.
But. Yeah.
Anyway, so there you go. Acer hyping up the tablet wars. Let's move on to something a little more serious. The FCC says they're going to update 911 emergency service requirements so that there would be a national standard that involved text messaging and multimedia messaging.
Yeah.
You could share your favorite YouTube video with the FCC, right?
No. It would be so that you could surreptitiously shoot video of the person breaking into your apartment.
Right.
Or if there was a car on fire, you could send that video. They used the example of having a shooter on campus as a reason you would want to use text messages.
Right, so that you could be silent while information was being transmitted. They also cited devices that could send data to 911, things like sensors for chemical detection or alarm system or, medical devices, things like Sync or OnStar. And that makes sense to me. I think it's time for an upgrade. I mean, bottom line, you know, there are lots of different ways that this could be innovative to provide better service. I mean, I live in Oakland. If you have anything that's not a violent crime, you have to email or go to the Oakland Police website to put in a report.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when as services are getting cut in places across the country, these types of data-based information systems, I think, will actually save money in the long run.
I think it, you know, when you first see the line adding text messaging to 911, everyone assumes, everyone thinks text messaging means, you know, teenagers
OMG.
Saying OMG,
my
WTF.
House is on fire.
That's not what this is for. I think this is a fantastic thing. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, the idea of calling someone to report an emergency could seem as ridiculous.
Yeah.
When calling was not, you know, it was not considered. When you think of the only people who used phones were teenagers back in the day. You could equate it the same way. And
right.
And of course, we don't just call 911 for pranks. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And so I think the same culture would hold true with 911 on text messaging.
It does leave one open in the chat room. They're asking, will you then be able to friend 911 on Facebook?
One would hope so. Yeah.
I mean, you want to be friends.
Yeah,
because
Facebook is going to be the way you communicate with everyone by text message, email, or anything else.
Right.
So you'll need to friend 911 if you want to report an emergency in the future.
At least in Oakland.
Facebook will run Oakland. U.S. TV networks have won a restraining order, not surprisingly, against UK-based Filmon.com. We talked about the fact that you could go to Filmon.com on your iPad and just watch over-the-air broadcasts from Los Angeles without having to pay, without having to prove you were in Los Angeles. Not a big surprise that the major networks got the courts to restrict them. What is a little odd is Filmon's response.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of a this is a business model that is just absolutely boggling the mind right now. It's like, hey, we're going to do something that's, we're not going to call it breaking the law, but breaking the rules for sure. And then we're going to let you guys freak out, you guys being the networks, and then tell you, hey, you know what? We proved we could do it, so now let's all be friends.
Filmon CEO David Alke said his company respects the court's decision, but will argue that Filmon's broadcasts are protected by the same laws that allow cable companies to rebroadcast content over the air. That's fatuous because you're broadcasting to the entire world on the internet. Cable companies are limited in location, and that's what the problem is. The LA station says, I don't want to be broadcast into other markets. Because there are other NBC, CBS, ABC stations there that we don't compete with each other, and that's not allowed. However, Alke added that he has formed partnerships with several independent broadcast channels and will be able to keep a compelling live offering online in the future. Coupled with our own library of content and that of our partners, Filmon will remain open for business.
This is a mind boggler.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's like throwing a rock through someone's window and then asking them out on a date.
Yeah, it's a total bunny boiler move here. I mean, it's just weird. It's just weird. But you know what? Hey, why not? You know, why not give it a shot? If it's that easy to do, why not just try it? It's sort of like being a patent troll, but with much more aggressively.
Yeah, exactly. I obviously, he knew exactly what he was doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that this was a way to get their attention and maybe, possibly get them to talk to him.
Hey,
well, they're talking. They're
talking
in court. By the way, paid content has him listed as David Alke. His name's Alke David. Thank you, chat room, for correcting that for us. Mm. All right. Let's move on to our first sponsor of today's show. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford and Voice Activated Sync. If you haven't tried it, go to a Ford dealer and check it out right now. If you're driving and you're distracted easily, you might want to consider this a lifesaver. You can use true hands-free calling. You can get turn-by-turn directions, but you can also send and receive those text messages. In fact, you could speak a text message, maybe send it to 911 when that's activated.
Hey.
They have 911 assist. Actually, Ford is ahead of the game here. When your airbags deploy, they automatically call 911. Sync is available exclusively on Ford Lincoln and Mercury vehicles. Makes calls on most Bluetooth-enabled mobile phones. Can route you around traffic jams. All you do when you get in, it attaches to your phone, and then you just speak to it, and it can change your playlists. It can send your messages. It can receive your phone calls. It can read your text messages to you. music and podcast search. So you can say, hey, find Tech News Today. It'll find the latest episode and play it. It'll even reroute you, like I said, around the traffic. So learn more about Sync. Go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Sync is standard in some Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury models and optional in others. Check it out, SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Verizon would like to rewrite telecom law.
No joke.
I'm sure they would. Verizon just put out a press release titled, Congress needs to update the nation's antiquated and anti-competitive telecom rules.
Mm-hmm.
That's short and pithy.
Yeah, fairly measured title.
Get your act together.
Verizon Public Policy VP Tom Taukey. Is it Taukey? I never know how to pronounce Mr. T-A-U-K-E's name. But straight it says the government should completely rewrite the Telecommunications Act. And it's not a bad idea. The Telecom Act was written in 1934 and revised in 1996. So here we sit almost in 2011. A lot has changed since 96. It's not a bad idea to get going on rewriting it. I doubt that everyone's going to rewrite it the way Verizon wants.
No, and they're making a very clear play. I mean, originally when we had all the kerfuffle about Verizon and Google talking about net neutrality and issues around the Telecoms Act, that was like tweaking. That was like, hey, let's just tinker with this act and let's take the screwdriver out and just to get it. Now they've got the sledgehammer out. They're saying, you know what? Screw it. It doesn't work. Just make it over.
Yeah.
Part and parcel, the whole shebang.
Verizon's picking timing because they think they have at least a House of Representatives that's more sympathetic to their needs. That's why they want it rewritten now. So you can question, you know, whether they are really being honest here and pushing for this. But the fact of the matter is they're probably right despite themselves. I'm going to quote one thing that Engadget quoted that I found perfectly entertaining. This is from Verizon. The grinding you hear are the gears churning as policymakers try to fit fast-changing technologies and competitive markets into regulatory boxes built for analog technologies and monopoly markets.
FDR? Who is that you're hearkening?
I'm not even sure.
It's like a fireside chat statement.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's true. It's very true. It's just hard for us to take it when Verizon is the messenger, I guess, is the bottom line. I mean, I think most people agree. It's one of those ugly situations where we're watching the sausage get made and maybe we just need to get a new piece of meat in there.
Yeah. You know? And if you don't know why, it's should there be net neutrality rules and why? How are telecoms regulated? Who manages them? Should there be rules that allow competitors to go over the pipes? And should the pipes be should the pipes be owned centrally should they allow monopolies? Should they not allow monopolies? All these questions are on the table if you rewrite telecom law. So interesting proposal from Verizon. You know what? No chance in hell of anything happening over the next 2 years. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm.
All right, viewers. According to a Turner Broadcasting study, are okay with web video ads. The more the merrier.
Hey, bring it.
Doesn't affect their viewing.
This actually shocked me when Tom gets into the numbers, because I feel like as a viewer of online video, I get annoyed with the ads.
Yeah, everybody talks about it. I don't want ads. There's lots of studies that say if you put a pre-roll ad that's 30 or 60 seconds, that you kill the number of people who actually want to watch the video.
Mm-hmm.
However, according to Turner's internal statistics, people who watched 30-minute broadcasts online viewed 40% of a show when they were presented with 1 minute of ads. But when they were presented with 16 minutes of ads in that 30-minute show, they still watched 37%. It only declined by 3 percentage points.
So get that. This is important. A 3% decline in viewing with a 16-fold increase in advertising. Now, if you're a network trying to figure out how to monetize video on the internets and losing money hand over fist over traditional channels, you read this and this is the happiest news you've gotten in years.
Well, except unless you stop at the point where they're only watching 40% of your show.
Well, but they were only watching 3% more. When you weren't making any money off of it.
Maybe your show sucks.
Well, so
it doesn't matter whether you have commercials or not. These people will stream anything, apparently.
I mean, I think that there's a real money grab desperation amongst the networks right now trying to figure out how this is going to work. I mean, we've talked a lot about Rupert Murdoch and the iPad newspaper that he's trying to create, which you know will have video in it. There's a lot of talk from the networks about the fact that online, their video is making more money than over the air. it's going to get ugly out there, and it's not going to benefit the consumer right away. And I have to also just say, hey, this is where I make my money to buy dinner, because I'm getting paid by the networks. They're trying to figure it out, man.
Well, you want them to actually have the most people watching if you want to get paid. So if these numbers are wrong in some way, right. we should point out most shows are not 30 minutes. Most shows are 60 minutes, and 60 minutes showed a steeper decline. People who watched 60 minutes shows with 1 minute of ads watched 59% of an episode, while those who had 20 minutes of ads along with a 60 minute show watched 49% of the show. So it declined by 10 percentage points. I haven't seen the study except for this write-up from Don Reisinger on CNET. So I'd like to dig into it a little to find out exactly how these ads were integrated, how it played out. Were they pre-roll? Were they internal?
Yeah.
How that worked.
There will be a nexus. The pendulum is swinging right now, and they'll find the midpoint where they can get the most ads with the most viewers. And up until now, we've been pretty spoiled. It's been pretty lean.
Life insurers are testing a way to authenticate you based on your data online. They're going to data mining companies that can keep personally identifiable data about you, stuff that's public, what you post on Facebook, what you post on Twitter, what your buying habits are. They have buying habits for you offline as well through your credit reports. Mm-hmm. They take all of that information, and the insurance companies are now going to use it to vet you on your life insurance premiums.
Well, and let's back into this a little bit, because when you get life insurance now, you have to give blood. Yes, back into it, back out. You have to give blood so that they can analyze the fluids from your body. You also do a urine test in many cases.
That's to see if you're, you know, terminally ill or if you have an unhealthy lifestyle.
And those are the exact same metrics that they're trying to plug into their creepy tables that tell you how long you're going to live. And they're trying to create a modeling situation that simulates the same type of results without having to draw blood or do a urine test. And they say that's to save money, that it costs about $125 to do those medical tests if you're going to get life insurance. They want to make life insurance available, shocker, to more people and people in the middle class. So they say, you what, instead of doing the $125 test, let us just put a cookie on your computer.
Well, they're not even going to put a cookie on your computer. They're just going to look in the data mining about what's already been done about you.
You don't even have to do anything.
Fair enough.
I mean, and that's the thing is, I've always thought, gosh, when they start having sort of an insurance aspect of this, especially health insurance, that's when it really freaked me out. Like, oh, that's when this is going to go.
Well, what
really
they say, they're very smart about this. They know the bad press they could get into very quickly, and they say, we're not going to use this to decline anybody's insurance.
Mm.
We're going to use this to avoid having to take the blood. So if we can figure out a way to predict whether you're going to pass the blood test and avoid it reliably, then that's what we'll use this for.
Right.
We will never use this data to decline someone. We would always go, you know, if the data mining says you're a bad risk, we're going to go ahead and make you take the blood test and do the old way to confirm that you're a bad risk, because maybe there's something wrong there.
Mm.
But they also don't want to have negative results. They want to have a really good prediction rate. And they say that in this test they did of 60,000 people that had already been approved for life insurance, they found it correlated very well to look at the risk factors in the data they mine.
The bottom line is that they are constantly trying to make the actuary tables more precise so that they can make more profits. This is never going to benefit the consumer.
No. They want to not have to pay out.
Right.
For a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And when they pay out, they want to have made more money on you.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise it doesn't make sense to sell life insurance.
Right.
Right. What's most unsettling, I think, for most people about this is the amount of data that's out there that they can buy from a third party about you. And it's not even just online data. It's offline data, too.
Yeah.
There are people who know all about you. And what they're trying to avoid is tripping off those credit reporting requirements.
Mm.
Because if they actually decline you service, then they have to meet the Fair Credit Reporting FTC regulations, which means they have to actually disclose a lot of how they do their business. It impedes what they can say and what they can't say and how they make their decisions. So when you say, I don't trust that they won't decline my coverage based on the data, it's in their best interest not to do that because they run against afoul of a whole bunch of regulations if they get caught, I guess we should say. Angry Birds is switching to game console. They say they're going to start working on versions for the Xbox 360, PS3, and Wii. Plants vs. Zombies sort of took a circuitous route. They started as a PC game, went to the phone, and then came back to the Xbox.
Yeah.
Angry Birds has obviously started as an iPhone game, now an Android game, and is headed to the console. So this seems to be the path for popular apps now when they are games that become popular as apps.
And I'm really curious to see the business model here. So they make a ton of cash in downloads for mobile gaming. Then they go to console. And will there be a market there? My gut instinct is that those who would play Angry Birds on the console have already played it on a smartphone. You think that there's the Venn diagram, there's enough differentiation in those two circles?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a lot of people who play console games and eschew the phone games. Mm. They're above that. They
really?
Would be willing to play a little game on their console. They wouldn't. It doesn't have to be a big first-person shooter Call of Duty type of thing. But playing those at that popular game that everybody's playing on the phone, I'm a real gamer. I play games on my console, and so they might be more willing to try it out. Hmm. Also, there may be people who are just like, you know what? I like the idea of playing it up on my big TV screen.
Well, I did that in terms of playing Plants vs. Zombies on the iPhone, and then when I got it on the iPad, there were enough little nuggets that were different, and then just the experience was different in terms of, you know, the bigger screen, the different interface, the different controls. But I'm not sure. I really want to see.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Just pull back the.
Who knows if they even release this as the same version that you get on your mobile? You know, they're going to add a lot of.
Well, and that's what Plants vs. Zombies did.
The big consoles.
And that, you know, that's the other thing is that you've got your Venn diagram, as I explained it, with the different types of gamers. But then there's also the people who are so crazy about Angry Birds, they'll play it in every possible variation, as long as there's a variation.
And that's the thing is you could also build in a whole bunch more Easter eggs and then you could make it worthwhile. Now, then the Easter egg model is also another idea. I think that what would be really cool is if they took these really popular
smartphone
games.
All the Easter eggs.
Yeah.
Well, I know. Well, the pigs are coming with their own game. So that's the exciting news. But I think what they should do is sell these to other more hardcore games as Easter eggs and build them in to other big releases. I think that would be a cool model. I'm just interested in it from a business perspective. Where are they going to make money on this?
Yeah.
I think it'll be fun to watch.
Well, I hope they do something cool with it because even though I'm not caught up in Angry Birds, I didn't get addicted. I did play it a little bit. And I just don't have the gene for the Angry Birds.
That's not the one
but
for you.
But it's a fun little game.
And did I ask you about Cut the Rope?
Yeah, Cut the Rope, same thing.
Yeah, but
I played it.
But see, you really like Fruit Ninja, and that didn't do it for me.
I like Fruit Ninja. I also like Plants vs. Zombies.
Well, at least we have that in
common. I like a tower defense game, a good tower defense game.
All right, okay, we can agree on that.
I also like Slingbox because
who doesn't?
It allows me to continue to do Tech News Today because they sponsor it. But it also allows me to watch my television anywhere I go without having to pay extra for it. At least once I buy the Slingbox, I don't have to pay a subscription fee. There's no monthly service fee. It just takes my television, puts it out over the internet to me and me alone so that I can watch it. You go to a Best Buy, maybe you buy a Slingbox, you bring it home, you plug it into your internet, you plug it into your television, and then you put the app on your laptop, on your BlackBerry, on your iPhone, on your iPad. They've got now. And then you can watch your home television live, anything you get, your local sports team, you get it over the air. This is not a film on situation.
No.
You're doing this legally because it's stuff you pay for and you're only putting it back to yourself. And anything off your DVR as well. They can control that with an IR blaster so that you can actually watch those recorded shows of stuff my dad says that you've been meaning to get around to while you're on the train.
Right.
As long as it's above ground and you get an internet connection.
Sure.
So check it out. Go to a Best Buy, get a demonstration, or just visit slingbox.com/twit and check out Slingbox. I don't know how I lived without it, especially when I travel.
Thank you, Slingbox.
On to the news fuse. Ladies and gentlemen, this just in, Farmville has fallen. Among Facebook apps with the most active users, an app called Phrases has taken the number one slot, ending Farmville's 15-month reign. Phrases lets Facebook users post quizzes, sayings, and images on their news feed. The app has 54,387,850 monthly active viewers. Farmville rests in second place with 53,939,878.
Someone call Mark Pincus and console him. Oh, it's so sad.
Oh, man.
Take
Farmville,
a moment.
15 months reign ends.
I gave it a moment of silence. Now that's over. Okay. Nielsen thinks they know what kids want for Christmas in the tech department. And they think they know this, well, because they asked. According to a survey, in October, 31% of kids aged 6 through 12 want, an iPad.
Of course they do.
A computer and an iPod Touch tied for second, 6 to 12. Jeez. Nintendo's DS took fourth, and the PS3, right with it, and smartphones and mobile phones all tied for fifth place. The iPhone, a TV, and the forthcoming Nintendo 3DS rounded out the top 10. Least popular, an e-reader.
Aww.
Books are dead.
The kids don't want to read.
Unless you can play games on it.
Right.
Then maybe an e-reader.
Right. We mourn for face Farmville and e-readers.
And reading. What did the teenagers want? They wanted a PC or a Mac. A little more practical.
Yeah.
Like, I need something bigger.
And their parents leave them alone.
All right. Didn't take long for the jailbreak to come along. New iOS 4.2.1 has been jailbroken with an updated Red Snow 0.9.6 B4. That's the version of Red Snow you need to get if you want to jailbreak your iPhone. Thanks to the iPhone dev team. For recent devices, the jailbreak is still tethered. That means users must reconnect their device to a computer via USB to jailbreak it if they need to restart. Not so handy when you're on a plane. Users of the iPhone 3G or the older iPhone 3GS models and the second-gen iPod Touch get an untethered jailbreak, however. So one benefit of owning an old iPhone, one of the few.
The Consumer Electronics Show has thousands of gadgets, miles of displays, hundreds of thousands of attendees, and yet it's been missing something. Nintendo!
Oh, right.
Yeah. The gaming company is returning to CES after a 16-year absence. So will they gamble on the Vegas venue to hype the imminent 3DS release we just talked about? Or will this be new news like, say, a 3D Wii?
Or a high-def Wii, maybe? A high-3-def Wii?
I don't know.
High-3D? No, I don't know.
High-HD-3D? I think it's definitely Wii. I had one of my Wii dudes called me from Nintendo saying, hey, are you going to be at CES? Because we're going to have some info. I'm like, okay, first off, let me get through Black Friday and Cyber Monday.
Call me later.
And then we'll talk about CES. Don't freak me out like that. But yeah, it's going
to
be Wii.
Microsoft is looking to expand its Silverlight web platform to Xbox 360, according to a recent job advertisement placed by the company. Now, you may know Silverlight from the web, but it's gone from being Microsoft's flash competitor to Microsoft's primary development platform for mobile applications, especially on the Windows phone. And now apparently Xbox. So maybe there's an Xbox app store in our future. Because, you know, they got the Netflix app. They got some apps on there. They do the games thing as apps. Why not add other apps?
Okay, that's an app store I can buy into. Right. That makes sense. The Beatles on iTunes, kind of a yawn for some in the tech world.
Yeah, nobody's going to buy that. Everybody's got Beatles. Nobody's going to buy it. Who cares?
I mean, come on. Everybody's already wanted the Beatles on their iPod. They ripped it from a CD, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
Wrong.
What?
Get this. 450,000 albums sold in the first week and 2 million individual songs sold on iTunes worldwide. Top song was Here Comes the Sun, top album Abbey Road, and thank God it outsold Taylor Swift last week.
Yeah,
there is justice in this world.
I mean, I like me some Taylor.
I'm going to let you finish.
Oh, okay, Kanye.
People serving in the U.S. military now have their own website where they can upload, share, and watch videos. MilTube is a safer, more secure alternative to YouTube with content protected behind firewalls. As such, it can serve the interests of military personnel who want to share videos, but also satisfy the concerns of the Department of Defense. MilTube could be used, among other things, for sharing training footage, news clips, and other videos.
You're planning a trip to Kuwait? Well, don't take your Nikon D80. Kuwait's Ministry of Information, Social Affairs, and Finance has banned DSLR cameras for non-journalists. This edict is in place for all public places, including on the streets and in shopping malls. Not to worry, lower-res cameras and disposable cameras from CVS, A-OK.
Why?
I mine is not to question why.
No.
Mine is just to read the damn news.
That is really weird.
I know.
All right. Finally, as we know, a lot of you will be traveling here in the United States for the Thanksgiving holiday. We want to bring to your attention a device that can help protect you as you wander through that backscatter scanner at the security lane. Mm-hmm. If you decide you don't want to opt for the pat-down, mm-hmm. you can buy some TSA-proof underwear with a fig leaf-shaped radiation patch in a place that might be more sensitive to radiation than other places.
Okay. I mean, do we all need the titanium underoos? Really? Really?
Well, it means that they won't have a picture of your privates on the scanner, and it stops the radiation.
Okay. Okay, the radiation thing, I'm not going to fight that. I love the image of the fig leaf. But I also have to say, having looked at the backscatter images, if you just wear a pair of underwear, it kind of balls up all your junk anyway, so they can't see the twigs and the berries and what twigs are long and short.
Well, now they see a fig leaf instead.
Well, I know, but just don't freeball and it'll all be fine. That's all I'm saying.
Men or women.
Well, okay, but I haven't, I mean, come on. What? Women do not
radiation.
Freak about this. The radiation is not.
Sterilization.
It's not just in your business that the radiation is an issue.
Not everyone else has had twins. Jeff Busk of Larkspur is selling the tungsten-lined underwear online. He's been selling them since March, actually, but sales have been brisk recently. The retail for up to $35 at street fairs and to friends. So get them while they're hot. He's probably run out already.
You know, I have to say, while I was playing devil's advocate against the fig leaf panties, I freaking love them. They are so awesome. Tom, you know what to get me for Christmas, right?
It's already in the... I'm just going to try to order them right now.
Okay. But
on to the calendar.
All right. Changing gears from the old underoos. Apple planning a December event with Rupert Murdoch. They're going to celebrate the daily, the iPad-only paper. Much discussion. Tom, you going to subscribe?
I'll definitely take a look at it. I don't, you know, subscribe is a strong word. I'll pay the 99 cents once to try it out. We'll see what it's like.
I like that they're saying it's, you know, a bunch of 20 or 20 somethings getting together to make like a funky new paper. I have friends in New York who are going to work for this from major network news organizations. They ain't 20 something. This
they're
is
like
serious.
18. Yeah, 18, yeah, 17.
Yeah, they're
12. Interns.
They are. They're totally 40-year-old interns.
40-year-old interns.
I mean, they're betting their careers on this thing, so that's a little bit of a long shot, Rupert. Next up, the beta version of NeverCookie released. It's combating EverCookie, right, Tom?
Yeah, an EverCookie is a kind of a catch-all name for any kind of tracking device that is not stored in your cookies folder. They can be flash cookies. They can be stored in other folders that are not emptied when you empty your cookies, and they tend to be reconstructable so that if you think you've deleted them, they can be put back without your knowledge. NeverCookie is a Firefox plugin designed to stop them from being placed in the first place.
On the similar note, reclaimprivacy.org, it was the scanner for Facebook that helped you lock down your Facebook settings just by dragging and dropping this bookmark when you were in your privacy settings. It's broken since last Monday when Facebook made some subtle changes to their privacy settings. It doesn't work anymore, and they've said, hey, it's open source, so anybody who wants to help us fix it, reclaimprivacy.org. I'm kind of bummed it's broken. It was a really cool service. Sony Reader. The app is hitting iPhone and Android devices in December. It's very clear that the multi-platform reader apps are the way of the future. The Kindle definitely blazed that trail. So now Sony Reader going there too. And then TNT Holiday, Tom. Jason, tell me a little bit about it.
Well, thank you for throwing to me on this one. I wrote up a blog post, actually, because we've got a few different ways that you can be a part of the holiday episodes this holiday season. We've got the best of episode you've heard us talk a lot about already. We've got Dancing with the TNT Stars, which sounds pretty cheesy, and you know what? It's going to be. But it was thrown out on an episode a couple of weeks ago that we should do this and allow you the chance to bob in your chair on the outro credits as well. So, and then finally, Open Mic, which is your chance to come on the show and talk to us. And we'll talk about your favorite tech story of 2010. All that information can be found at bit.ly/TNTHoliday2010.
Nice.
And go check it out. All the details are there.
Or linked from the wiki at twit.tv/TNT.
That's right.
In the episode in this, the show notes for this episode.
And I have one more thing in the calendar, which is tomorrow, Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I will be taking over the calendar to give you my very, very best of Black Friday deals. I have a spreadsheet that you would not believe because I'm covering all this for ABC. And there are some really good deals out there. So I will be sharing those with you tomorrow.
Emails to TNT@twit.tv. Patrick from Newton, Mass. says, in yesterday's show, you joked about people still using WordPerfect. Sadly, my father's office is one of those places. He works in a U.S. attorney's office.
Oh, that is so sad.
Oh, I'm sorry. Also, we got an email pointing out that it makes a guy nuts when Apple complains about fragmentation on the Android platform. And he was saying, Apple's just as fragmented. You've got the Apple 4. You've got the Apple 3GS. You've got the Apple 3G. Nobody ever mentions the original iPhone is stuck at iOS 3 and abandoned. There were hardware features added between 3G and 3GS and another from 3GS to 4. That means an application you purchase must accommodate those changes. Apparently, one can throw stones at Android, but they shouldn't be so smug. I don't think their record at iOS is that much better. Thanks, Don.
We like hearing the counterpoint. I think the Android marketplace is still a little bit more fractured, but he makes a good point.
And you get the last one.
I do?
Yeah.
Surprise.
Sure. I read your first email and threw you off. I apologize.
Oh, sorry. This is from Phil Barter in Worcester, Mass. Okay, so I went gaga for Hulu when it hit Roku. This weekend, I took a long look at Hulu and lost my infatuation. Then yesterday, my old girlfriend, Netflix, said she'd go as low in Hulu in cost, whoa, but I'd have to settle for no discs.
Before marriage.
That's right. I'd like to say on my Facebook page, it now reads that Netflix and I are back in a relationship, but Hulu, it's complicated.
The saga of Phil. Phil is carrying the dreams and hopes of many in this nation in their quest to decide between Netflix and Hulu.
He's very polyamorous, too. I'm kind of impressed with,
yeah, I know,
Phil.
Very progressive there, Phil.
Working the streaming ladies. Nice.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Don't forget, we will be back with the Black Friday deals as well as our last show of the week before the Thanksgiving break here in the U.S. That's tomorrow. So see us then. Twit.tv/TNT, TNT at twit.tv or 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you then.
Bye. White boy. Come on.
Yeah, no, he doesn't.
Come on, Tom.
What?